Oh, you're just checking if there is battery, huh? That's why you get paid the big bucks. Morning, morning. I will not. I think I've missed the last several review weeks. I won't be here next week. So if y'all want to mount a coup and find somebody else, that would be the time to do it. Next week's review week, so y'all go over everything that we've been over. I'll see if I can talk Kevin into filling in for me. Oh. We might have a volunteer back there. Never mind. Morning, Joe.
Good morning.
How are you? Me too. Mine's more just mentally. He's ready. He's always ready. That guy's got a motor. He's gonna be a good hard worker one day. We'll give it 2 more minutes. Can't complain about people being late because the food's always delicious, so. There they are. Now we can start. Yes, it is. See? Everybody's got it figured out. It's like in football. I always used to walk in the stadium at the very back of the pack. That's Monty. He's our caboose. He rounds everybody up, makes sure everybody gets in the building, keeps everybody in line. So now we can go ahead and start. I was telling everybody just a second ago we're going to be in 1 Kings. We're going to read a little bit into it. I want to rehash on some previous weeks. I just told everybody that I will not be here this week, and so we'll find somebody maybe to do the review week for me. but I wanted to bring this up, and Jaden's granddad texts me. Wow. Just had a flashback to my Monday through Friday. Texts me fairly frequently with thoughts that he has. He's a big fan of the show Chosen. And so he was, I think this is the last season of the show. the fifth season, so he's going through that. And he sent me a text. I'm not going to read all of it, but I'm going to read a little excerpt from it. Only by a heart's open door in the life, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, inviting the indwelling spirit to come in so that spiritual enlightenment, recreation into the image of God, confirmation and transformation into his image, renewal of the mind and wisdom from above can fan a mustard seed spark of faith into a consuming flame of faith that overcomes the world. I really liked that little snippet of the text that he sent me, because we've been going through this deep pattern of the highs and the lows of Israel. And I hope we've overlaid that with our own lives and seen that in our own lives. But we see, and we're about to read, the reason I wanted to read that is because we're about to read of a time in Israel's history where God gives them over into slavery. And I'm going to read a couple things from your book that intrigued me, because oftentimes we don't do the math ourselves. But we go through this low of lows when God gives his people over to the Assyrian Empire, and we have this, you just see this struggle, and sometimes we can be off put by that to an extent, or some of us may be on the way other end that's like, oh yeah, they get what you deserve. Like, I think there's two sides of that. And we usually will fall in one of the two camps, but I hope we can see, we can take all that's we're about to read and find a way to narrow it down into what is this telling us about God. And what it's telling us about God, and I haven't done a great job, I know I've read it a few times, but what it's telling us about God, I think, is portrayed well in the memory verse. Proverbs 3:11. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be weary of his reproof, for the Lord reproves him whom he loves as a father the son in whom he delights. I'm going to read that again before we get into this, because I hope this is ringing in our minds throughout this lesson today. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be wary of his reproof, for the Lord reproves him whom he loves as a father the son in whom he delights. So we have this kind of strange, not sure where it stems from. I kind of get it. We have this strange thing that when something bad happens in our life, what do you hear people say? Well, God doesn't do that. That's from somebody else. Well, God, it's like, well, it's probably time to understand a little bit that God disciplines his children out of what? Do not despise the Lord's discipline or be wary of his reproof, for the Lord reproves him whom he loves as a father, the son in whom he delights. That is an incredibly neat passage. Because how I see it in Brooks, when I get on to Brooks, not so much with my wife right now because he's in a rebellious phase. We're trying to get that out of him. Working pretty hard at that, but he's stubborn. When I get on to my son, what does he do for me, Jaden? He kind of gets sad. You can see, like, that just really eat at him. My wife, maybe. Not all the time. But when I get on to Brooks, there's a withdrawing him that he recognizes, and he probably is going to do the same thing in 2 minutes. But in the moment you see him withdraw and understand that what he's doing is wrong. And the discipline of a father, whatever form that takes, the discipline of the father creates in him some pause. But hopefully one day, maybe till he's out of the house, that's how long it took me. But the discipline of my father started to make sense, right? And sometimes it takes all too long to figure that out. Did me, but I was also stubborn, so we didn't have much of a chance. But this discipline and this reproof that it's talking about, oftentimes you despise in the moment, but hopefully you can look at it with a clear enough mind and a clear enough heart that you can understand where it comes from. I think we've probably all had that moment in our lives where we've understood. How many times has something bad happened and on the end of it there's a rainbow? Probably quite a few times that you can think of in your own life where I personally, Hunter wanted this, and then out of somewhere something bad happens, and then I can't obtain this. And then a month down the road, you hear something or something gets brought up, and you're like, man, right now in this moment would look a whole lot different if I had obtained what I, Hunter, was looking for, instead of listening to what God is drawing me towards. And so I think this is a good verse to let ring in our ears through the trials and the tribulations and all that happens. And I hope we understand emphatically that when the bad stuff's going on, and oftentimes we look at it as bad, but it may not be so bad. When the bad stuff's going on, I hope we can settle down enough to look at it and understand, hey, I'm going to let God have this. I'm going to let him take over and have this, because maybe he's pulling me in a different direction, in a direction that I did not want to walk, as we talked about Jonah in the last week or 2 weeks ago. And so I hope we see that very evidently. But now we're going to go into a story of God's discipline. And I want y'all to know that God's plan is set forth and is followed through emphatically. When God sets something to be, what happens? It's going to happen. And so God has set this forth. And in your books, I like numbers. This is a number that I thought was incredibly interesting. God had been patient for 250 years and sent many prophets to warn Israel and Judah. But after years of constant rebellion, idolatry, and hostility towards God, his anger was finally provoked into action, and he judged Israel by removing them from his sight. 2 Kings 17:18, we'll get into here in a minute. The Lord finally rejected Israel, afflicted them, not passively let stuff happen. He afflicted them and delivered them into the hand of plunderers. God sent the powerful nation of Assyria to bring judgment upon the nation. So I want us to see that this is God's hand goes against Israel. But again, what do we read? That's a moment of discipline. Why? For the people that he loves, and for the son that he finds delight in. So we see this in how many years? 250. Oftentimes we read Bible stories and we're like, hey, maybe give them a little rest, right? Because they're back to back to back to back. And it seems like this is happening all so fast. And then you read somebody who's actually put it together, and it's been 250 years of turning their backs on God. I hope that puts a little bit of perspective in mind as we read through this. So we're going to go ahead and flip over to 1 Kings 17. These are the years that were prophesied by Hosea, by Amos, that we actually talked about in earlier weeks.
First Kings
First Kings. Maybe. You probably got me. Second Kings, I'm sorry. Good catch. Well, I started thinking about it. I was like, hey, I am in Second Kings. Good catch. I've been misleading y'all all morning. I even tried to give the early people a head start, and I gave them a head start in the wrong direction. In the 12th year of Ahaz, king of Judah, Hoshea, the son of Elah, began to reign in Samaria over Israel, and he reigned 9 years. And he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, yet not as the kings of Israel who were before him. Against him came up Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, and Hoshea became his vessel, and he paid him tribute. But the king of Assyria found treachery in Hoshea, for he had sent messengers to So, king of Egypt, and ordered no tribute to the king of Assyria, and he had done year by year. Therefore the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. Then the king of Assyria invaded all the land and came into Samaria, and for 3 years he besieged it. In the 9th year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria captured Samaria, and he carried the Israelites away to Assyria and placed them in Halah and on Habor, the river of Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes. And this occurred because the people of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, and who had brought them out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and had feared other gods, and walked in the customs of the nations of whom the Lord drove out before the people of Israel, and the customs that the kings of Israel had practiced. And the people of Israel did secretly against the Lord their God things that were not right. They built for themselves high places in all their towns, from watchtower to fortified city. They set up for themselves pillars of Asherim on every high hill and under every green tree. And there they made offerings on all high places, as the nations whom the Lord carried away before them. And they did wicked things, provoking the Lord to anger. And they served idols, of which the Lord had said to them, you shall not do this. Yet the Lord warned Israel and Judah by every prophet and every seer, saying, turn from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes in accordance with all the law I had commanded your fathers, and that I sent to you by my servants the prophets. Now, as a stubborn individual, we already talked about, this would sound like a lot like me. When I'm not in a great place, when I'm not following God well, my stubbornness gets highly in the way. It says he sent every prophet and every seer saying, what? Turn from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes in accordance with the law that I commanded your fathers. You can ask Jaden, when I get on a path of I'm going to do something, I tend to get on that path without much push off. We were redoing a bathroom at our house in Texas, and I was getting so frustrated that one day I said, I'm just going to stay up all night and finish it. She's like, yeah, you're not going to finish it. And I was like, oh, I'm going to finish it. So about 5 in the morning before I went to work, I finished the bathroom. And you can see that in these people, that they have something that this culture that they're immersed in has started to overcome it. In your books, it talks about these, when the Samaritans, or the Samaritans, we read about the Samaritans, and we see a story of Christ with the woman on the well. And what's different about these Samaritans? They're half Israelite, half not. So these people have this kind of distaste for all these very righteous people supposedly in Israel. If you think about the Pharisees, this is probably appalling to them. Why? Because God commanded them not to go into marriages, into relationships with these other people. Why? Because they're getting their values are getting immersed in these people. And so there's where you start to have this big cultural divide amongst these people. And so there's already division. There's already people looking down on these other people. Why? Because, hey, God told you not to do that. You're the product of a relationship that was not condoned by God. And so you have this separation, and things in Israel are not going well right now. And for 250 years, which side of the Samaritans was playing out? The wrong side, right? For 250 years, they let this culture that they married into, that God said, hey, don't do this because they're going to draw you away from me. For 250 years, that side's been winning. And from Watchtower to City Wall and everywhere in between, they're putting up idols. They're letting that culture ingrain and immerse in the culture that they were called out of in the land of Egypt, that they were called out of when God brought them out of all this stuff that they were supposedly divided from, and now they're letting it rule again. And for 250 years, God sent prophets and seers saying, turn away from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes. We're going to get to something that I think is incredibly interesting, and time-wise, I'm probably going to skip over there. And the king of Assyria brought the people from Babylon, Cutheth, Ava, Hamath, and Sepharvaim, and placed them into the cities of Samaria. I'm sorry, this is verse 24. And they took possession of Samaria and lived in its cities at the beginning of their dwelling there, and they did not fear the Lord. Therefore the Lord sent lions among them, which killed some of them. So the king of Assyria was told, the nations that you have carried away and placed in the cities of Samaria do not know the law of the God of the land. Therefore he sent lions among them, and behold, they are killing them because they do not know the law of the God of the land. Two things that I want to point out. Lions are killing people. Do you think in that part of the world that happened every once in a while? Probably so. But this is so prevalent that something unnatural is happening, that word gets brought to the king. So I think oftentimes in people who like to contradict the Bible, they're going to say, hey, it's just a lion attack. Like in villages over in Africa, guess what happens nowadays? People get attacked, people get eaten, alligators get eaten. So there's, but I want us to know that there's already a level of that here. But this is happening to a different level. A different level that they understand that, hey, this is something to do with a higher power. So what do they send to the king and say? Hey, we don't really know the God of the land, right? They put God back into this box and say, hey, that God must have been a God of this land. And so, hey, we really don't know the rule of the law of the God of the land. So what does the king do? Then the king of Assyria commanded, send there one of the priests whom you carried away from there, and let him go and dwell there and teach them the law of the God of the land. So one of their priests whom they had carried away from Samaria came and lived in Bethel and taught them how they should fear the Lord. It's pretty interesting, isn't it? That even over this oppression, who does it take to say, hey, you guys need to wake up? Somebody who's got no idea who the God is, because he's calling them the God of what? The God of the land. And something grand enough is happening that a guy who has no idea who this God is, who's several hundred years removed from these stories of God bringing this people group out of Egypt, who God has actually just given his own people into his hands, and something big enough is happening where he's like, hey, y'all are at odds with the God of the land, and he sent lions down there to massacre quite a few people. We need to get this corrected. So what does he do? He takes a preacher and he sends him back there. And the preacher tries to teach them how they should fear the Lord. But every nation still made gods of its own and put them in the shrines and on the high places that the Samaritans had made. Every nation in the cities in which they lived, the men of Babylon made Succoth-Benoth. The men of Cuth made Nergal. The men of Hamath made Ashima, and the Avites made Nibhaz and Tertak, and the Sepharvites burned their children in the fire to Adrammelech. And Adrammelech, the gods of Sepharvaim, they also feared the Lord and appointed from among themselves all sorts of people and priests of the high places who sacrificed for them in the shrines of the high places. So not only were they doing their own thing, what were they also trying to do? But and here it says, they also feared the Lord, capital L, and appointed from among themselves all sorts of people as priests of the high places who sacrificed for them in the shrines of the high places. They're trying to get best of both worlds, aren't they? They're like, hey, yeah, I can recognize now that this might be bad, so let's appoint some priests and let's have them do some sacrifices to this God. We'll also have people sacrifice to this God. And what's the group that it directly mentions as doing both? The people who are sacrificing children to their God. See, this is getting very dark and very twisted, but you see the mindset of these people, that they're just going to kind of shotgun pattern. There's a word that you use in the car industry. At the old dealership, we don't have the lenders like we do, but at a new car store, you have a finance manager that's having a hard time getting somebody approved. He does what? Shotgun status. He takes all his lenders, he sends their application over there and sees if somebody will take it. This is what they're doing. They're shotgunning it all over the place and they're saying, hey, we're just going to try and make sure that we're on everybody's good side. But what do they not get? What are they actually not listening to? God. But this is, yes, this does make you think of that, but this is even more twisted than any of that, because they aren't just, I mean, they're not listening at all. They're taking God from over here, and they're taking their own customs and practices from over here. And they're saying, hey, they're not listening, period. They're just taking these two separate worlds and they're merging them together and saying, hey, this should please the Lord. Wow, that's happening a lot right now. Taking this cultural garbage that we get from nowadays and all this. And there's this definition of acceptance in the world right now that's not accurate. It's not true. There's this definition that it doesn't matter what you do. And so when you stand up firm and you stand up for God and say, hey, that's not right, everybody on the outside is going, isn't your God kind of the accepting one? Like, you hear about all these other gods that you have to do all this stuff to appease them and you have to follow all this. Isn't your God different than that? And you're saying, yes, my God is different than that. He's saying, I will take in anybody that chooses me. But that's not acceptance in that, hey, you can live a life of sin and not care about me and still get all the promises that were made. There's these big churches that are accepting of all kinds of wickedness, that claim to be followers of God. And what they do is they preach this big acceptance thing. And then you read the Bible and you realize that, hey, acceptance is, I am a wicked sinner. God accepts me. I've turned away from my sin. I've died to myself and been born again into what? Into Christ. And that's amazing. That lights me up. I get giddy just thinking about it. That I've had that opportunity to come into relationship with Christ, though that was severed from the creation and the fall story. I've had the opportunity to come back into that. That's acceptance. But what did I do, Hunter? I've done a lot of nasty, wicked stuff. I've sinned a lot in my lifetime. But guess what I am assured and confident of? That I have my place stamped in heaven. Boy, that sounds incredibly accepting. But that doesn't mean that I should go on living my life of sin that I've turned away from and God's called me out of. Acceptance is not accepting of actions. It's not accepting of continual sin. Acceptance is understanding that, hey, if we decide and we choose to pursue God and want a relationship with God and we draw closer to Him and we pursue a relationship with Him, then we stand before Him and what does He see? The blood of His Son covering us. Wow, that's powerful. But that has nothing to do with me continually going down the wrong path without care for who? For God. See, what these people are doing is they're doing exactly what a bunch of people are doing today, which is saying, hey, Lord, I'm just going to keep doing this and maybe kind of mix you with what's going on in the world today and what's kind of culturally accepted. And then I'm going to mix this, and then we'll have something that's easier to chew on for a lot of people. God says, nope, doesn't work for me. Doesn't work for me, why? Because I'm still a just God. I've given you a way out, and you can choose to accept that way out or not, but I'm still a just God. If God wasn't just, He would not be a God worth worshiping. I can stand up here and say that with 100% confidence. Why? Because if God isn't just, you're just worshiping the next power-hungry politician. Because they're not just. You're just worshiping whatever you can find off the street. There's something different about our God. There's something exciting. There's something that should draw you in, should latch a hold of you, and should never let you go. There's something there that should cause an excitement and stirring inside yourself. And for these people, very much, that is not how they're taking it. Why? Because they're not immersing themselves in what they're called to do. They're giving the watered-down version. They're taking pretty much His name. And that's it. They've got this name above it. If you walked past and they probably made an altar, which we know that doesn't go well, right? They probably made an altar. When they created the golden calf, what were they saying? This is Yahweh, the person that brought you out of Egypt. And what'd they do? They depicted Him as a calf. They depicted the God as something that God created that's also something that we were called to reign over, to rule, subdue the land, and take care of His creation. So we took Him from up here to lesser than even us. And we have this play out over and over again. So they stamp the name of Yahweh on something that is just that man created. If you're taking God who created everything that we see and you're stamping His name on something that we can create, there is something extremely wrong. So what does God do? He gives them over into the hands of these people. And we see that as maybe, wow, I got long-winded in that segment again. We see that play out time and time again. And so God gives them over into their hands. And I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. This is a statement. You shall not fear other gods or bow yourselves to them or serve them or sacrifice to them, but you shall fear the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt with great power and with an outstretched arm. You shall bow yourself to him, and to him you shall sacrifice. And the statutes and the rules and the law and the commandment that he wrote for you, you shall always be careful to do. You shall not fear other gods, and you shall not forget the covenant that I have made with you. You shall not fear other gods, but you shall fear the Lord God, and he will deliver you out of the hand of all your enemies. However, they would not listen, but they did according to their former manner. So these nations feared the Lord and also served their carved images. Their children did likewise, and their children's children, as their fathers did. So they do to this day. Whew. So they do to this day. That's a troubling statement right there. And we may not be building idols, we may not be building all this stuff, but we're in a time period where it's pretty easy to find something other than God to worship. Just as they were in this instance. They were immersed in the culture that had gods for everything. The sun, the moon, the stars. Anything that you could think of. Water, fertility. All these gods that get mixed up. And they want to have these individual prayers. And they don't realize that there's a God that's a God over all of it. There's a God that cares enough about you that his desire and his sole purpose of sending his son down to die on the cross was to have a relationship with you. And that's the God who's the God over everything that I just listed and more. That is the God. I'm going to read one more little snippet from Jay's granddad that he sent me. Human nature leads us to believe that our habitual participation enlightens us, but the disciples had routinely participated in a religious walk with Jesus himself, yet they did not understand. They were too still confused until receiving the gift of the Holy Spirit. All these steps and actions and all this stuff, if you take it and you remove it from who God is, I'm going to go ahead and read a little more. Memorizing the law, knowing the stories, participating in regular religious activities was not enough. We dare not deny the indwelling power and the activity of God's Holy Spirit. We dare not deny the indwelling power and activity of God's Holy Spirit. There's the line that we talk about that Kevin's mentioned a lot. And I think in this we heard that it's incredibly valuable to find the middle. The spirit side, the law side, we go through all of our day to day, and what are these people might have hit, kind of? And we talked about this in the Sermon on the Mount, but hey, they might have hit these sacrifices. They might have done things on the day the Lord called them to do X, Y, and Z. They might have done all of these things that seemed like they were checking their boxes. What did they miss in all of it? God. Like the whole thing was just checking boxes to appease a God that sent lions upon them in such a way that everybody knew that, hey, this is not natural. And in their attempt to appease God, they probably just made things worse. Because their attempt to appease God left God completely out of it. And I hope when you show up here on Sundays or on Wednesday nights or whatever practices, ladies study or whatever it is, I hope God is extremely immersed in all that you're doing. I hope as a reflection of God, you're reflecting Him well enough that that is radiating out. Because we see in this just meaningless boxes that are checked. That, hey, we're doing the right things, but like we talked about in the Sermon on the Mount, are you doing the right things with the wrong heart? Probably, I do often. You're doing the right things with the heart of, hey, this is probably better for me. You're doing the right things out of, hey, maybe God will give me a little bit of kickback if I do this. Are you doing the right things for all these reasons that aren't just the sole purpose of God dwells in you and He's radiating out of you? And you're reflecting Him well. That's all these people are doing. They sent a preacher down, and what did they teach him? What does it say they sent him to teach him? Or the preacher tried to teach him? To fear God. Did it say anything about teaching them the rituals and the practices and the commandments and all this stuff? No. It said what the priest did when he came down was try to get them to fear God, but what did they not do? They did not fear God. What did they do? Make sacrifices and all this stuff. But they missed the whole God part. It's a scary place to be when you feel like you're checking the right boxes and you leave God out of it. So I'd encourage us to reflect throughout this week, throughout this service, throughout all of it, that we make sure that whatever we're doing, whenever we're, because y'all hopefully claim to be reflections of Christ on a day-to-day basis. Hopefully. Hopefully when you're out in the world and when you're having interactions with people, there's something different about you, and when it gets brought up, you don't shy away from the fact that you're a follower of Christ, a believer of God in all of its aspects. And hopefully when they interact with you, they see that something's different. Hopefully they don't see somebody that just makes a big deal about going to church, or makes a big deal about bringing something to potluck, or makes a big deal about all of the stuff that may on the outside look like, hey, you're doing things pretty good. Hopefully what they see is somebody who looks completely different than the world and the culture that we're immersed in. I pray that for my boys, for myself, for my wife. Now, I hope God draws them near. I hope God keeps working on me, because typically when I ask God to work on me, some not fun discipline happens. that's why they tell you not to pray for patience. I went for about a year asking for patience, and I got a big dose of not fun on my day-to-day. And I think that, but don't be scared of that. We should enjoy, and I think that goes into part of these trials and tribulations that it talks about in Romans, to consider it pure joy when you go through trials and tribulations. Because why? That's shaping you. Don't be scared to pray for patience because it might hurt a little bit. Lean into it. Enjoy knowing that you are, and I'm going to add sons and daughters into this verse. Not trying to be bad or add my own stuff, but I think we know that it's relating to all of us. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline or be wary of His reproof, for the Lord reproves him whom He loves as a father the son in whom He delights. That's what I want to be. A son in whom He delights. So lean into the work and the not fun and the stuff that we don't often like to do because we just kind of want to stay in a more comfortable zone. Lean into God working on the rough edges. even though it's not fun. Thank y'all for being here. We will not see you next week, but something tells me there might be somebody better in line for the next week. I have a lot of fingers, but no fingers are pointing to themselves, just other people. Thank y'all.